Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Yeah.
Marquee Moon and television. Wow.
Fire the drummer.
What do you mean?
Well, I've never heard such an inconsistent and shocking drum pattern.
That's a classic. Wait, how could you say that?
It may be a classic, but there's some accidents there. I would call them cluster somethings, but I'm not allowed to say that. But it sounded like there were accidents happening in that song. It's a classic song. It's a great song. The actual performance is really cool, but it's absolutely clear that they recorded it all together there. But, of course, Tom Verlaine, he is one of my musical and guitar-playing heroes. He's, you know, when this came out in the late 70s...
1977.
Yeah. It was produced by Andy Johns, of course. Well, sorry, engineered by Andy Johns and co-produced by Andy Johns as well. And I was interested in listening to it just because of that production, because, of course, he was responsible for a lot of the Rolling Stones stuff, and he engineered some of the greatest albums of all time by Led Zeppelin.
Of course.
2, 3, 4, House of the Holy. I think he did them all, like Physical Graffiti, and he worked very closely with Jimmy Page. So, of course, I was really interested in listening. But Tom Verlaine and his guitars, I mean, he used unusually a Jaguar and a Jazzmaster guitars, which, and he played with a very clean sound, no distortion, wound third, very heavy strings, but he has at the start very melodic, and even without any distortion during that whole piece, there, that middle section, which is very extended, beautiful solo playing, it's really, you know, it builds up without any huge amounts of distortion, you know?
Yeah.
And setting the drums apart and the little bits of incidents happened in there, it really does, you know, build up.
Yeah. I really like him, actually. There's very few electric guitar players that I really like, but I like his language. I kind of understand him. He gets through to my head, which is unusual.
Mm.
But I like your playing as well.
Well, thank you.
Now, I didn't know this, but Tom Verlaine actually changed his name, and he named himself after the cymbalist poet Paul Verlaine, because he was inspired by Bob Dylan when he changed his name, because he wanted to distance himself from his past. I think he ran away from school. I think he got out the second time, and they ended up sort of doing a residency at CBGB's, and where Patti Smith was, and they dated for a while, and they worked together later on as well. So it's quite interesting. And he used to play sax, I think, but he picked up the guitar when he heard the Rolling Stones. He was inspired by them.
Probably why he wanted Andy Johns. Because they signed to Elektra, didn't they? But they'd only let Tom Verlaine produce the album if they had Andy Johns, or an experienced engineer, working on it with him. You know?
What I really like is that when you read about the fact that they had other offers from major labels and they turned them down waiting for the right deal, I like the fact that he knew what he wanted to achieve, and he wasn't actually that experienced, but he just knew that he wanted to do his own production, and obviously working with somebody who wasn't going to boss him around, but who he could trust in terms of, you know, the engineering side. I think it's...
Well, you can't trust much better than Andy Johns, of course. Sadly, no longer with us, but, you know, he left some incredible work behind him, you know?
And what was interesting, he did, and here you go, here's another, these things don't necessarily happen anymore, but they got on the front cover of the NME, and basically that really sort of kicked them off in terms of popularity as well. And they'd already signed up to support Peter Gabriel on his USA tour, so they couldn't go touring straight away, and they didn't have such a good time of it because it didn't really appeal to Peter Gabriel's audience, which is like middle America.
Yeah.
But then they went and did a tour of UK theatres and they hit it. And guess who was supporting them?
Go on.
Blondie.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Holy moly. I bet that was a bit of an experience.
Yeah. So can you imagine? But it's all CBGBs. It's all that time. It's Verlaine. And Blondie were around that scene as well. So they all knew each other.
Yeah, this is the sort of the real pivotal point of the punk scene. You know, 77, 76, 78. It was all happening. So, you know, and for them to turn up, because again, it was a guitar band like Dire Straits, because Dire Straits, you know, they popped up with Sultans of Swing right in the middle of that period. And you thought, well, where's all that come from, you know?
It's a bit odd because when people were trying to describe it, they were saying it was very difficult to categorise the album when it was released in 77. It was hailed as something entirely original, like a new dawn in rock music. And I like this. They said, new dimensions of sonic overdrive.
What a whole load of journalistic bullshit. That's not mass bullshit, man. Incredible.
Yeah.
And also I've seen him being called art punk.
Oh, yeah. There's loads of stuff about that. But
anyway,
I know we chat a bit, but sometimes it's like, let's just play the next tune. Let's listen to the music.
Right on. Baby, Please Don't Go by Them.
Who's Them?
Well, I don't know.
The Them? Or is it Them?
No, it's definitely Them.
Yeah.
Because it's The Them. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? But anyway, Van Morrison on vocals.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, well, it's one
I
of
didn't
his...
know that, by the way, that he was in Them before.
Amazing. Because, I mean, he went on to incredible things. And that was a cover, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. That was... it's one of the most played, arranged and rearranged pieces in blues history. It was a traditional song made popular by Delta blues musician Big Joe Williams. He started recording that in, like, 1935. And Them, that they released their version in 1964.
Mm. With Jimmy Page on rhythm guitar. Now, when you listen to it with headphones on, and I urge everyone to listen to it with headphones on, because you can hear, and in, as it goes towards the end of the song, you hear him going, whoop, whoop, and you go, and there's this like, funny whoop underneath. And if you listen to that, and then listen to Led Zeppelin and stuff he was doing then, he was using very, very similar technique.
Really?
Yeah, really cool.
Get and, you radar ears.
Yeah, well, I've just heard, well, you know, I have radar ears. It's... But it's beautiful, you know. And that guitar line, it's a great, great line.
It is, isn't it? I like that.
Yeah, absolutely, you know, great line.
It's, they were signed to Decca as well, weren't they, to start off with? And they made their TV debut on Ready, Steady, Go, joining the Rolling Stones. And then that song became the theme tune, and it kind of took off, I think. And they released it that as a single, Gloria, which they're very they're renowned for as well. That was the B-side, and it got to number 10 in the UK charts.
And just an aside, I'm just thinking about it, but yes, that note, you know, that is the flat
it's
five.
Not.
It is the devil note.
You're not supposed to, well, yeah. Well, it has a little bit of...
It does, yeah. But it really adds attention to the song, you know. And it's great. It was very unusual to hear that in those days, you know, especially to hold on it so long, you know. Really cool. Really cool.
Well, it's quite interesting as well. So that was released in 1964. Now, Van Morrison left the band in 1966 to go solo. And in Wiki it says that they're renowned for actually influencing other bands like The Doors.
Mm.
Now, one thing as well, while that track was playing, I don't know why, because you remember when we met that chap who went to school with Van Morrison in the sidings in Castletown? We mentioned this on a previous show.
Indeed.
And he was in a band with Van, but then he got sort of stage fright before he got to the stage and he just wouldn't leave the house to go to do a gig. He was only a young lad, wasn't he?
He was.
So a lovely man. So anyway, I know that he met up with Van later on, but I just had this thought. I just put in a search, is Van Morrison really grumpy? Right? Because I just thought, I'm not sure whether I believe that. And funny enough, straight up on this headline, my grumpy image is just a myth, says Van Morrison, and lazy journalists need to get a sense of humour. Oh, well, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
know a few musicians that have worked with him.
Okay.
One of them being our drummer, Steve Gibson. That's right, who's worked with Van Morrison. And I'm afraid that isn't entirely true.
but also what he says as well, and this could be something, he doesn't want to tour a lot now. He said he's tired. He just wants to play local gigs. I think he's just tired. But he needs to gig, like he needs to breathe. So he loves these smaller, intimate gigs. He likes to cross the bridge and go home. You know, and there's something in that. Back in the USSR, the Beatles, released in 1968 as part of the White Album, also known as the Beatles.
Yeah, and it was a single, of course.
Of course.
Now, interestingly enough, I know quite a lot about this track. In fact, I know quite a lot about the Beatles generally because I've been reading this excellent and superb book by Jeff Emerick. I must mention it every week, who was the engineer on a lot of the Beatles sessions.
Yeah, I love your stories. It's kind of, yeah, I want to read the book.
Well, you're in the middle of it.
I know, I haven't finished it yet.
I don't think you're up to this point yet.
No,
but anyway,
that's what I mean.
The situation was, is that he walked out at the beginning of these sessions, and Ken Scott took over. And some of this was recorded at Abbey Road, and some was recorded at Trident Studios. And I'm just starting the Ken Scott book right now, so I'm only about a few pages in. But and it's a fascinating story, because the band at this point were really in disarray. And, was it Ringo Starr walked out? Was that right?
He did, yeah. Because Paul was having a go at his drumming, and I think there was just a bad atmosphere, and he just walked out, he'd had enough.
Well, it is interesting, because the a lot of, when you read Emmerich's book, he's talking about Paul McCartney being a real musical genius. And I obviously had a lot of empathy with him, and I think that he was his favourite one out of the Beatles. But he was saying that Paul McCartney played quite a few of the drum parts.
Yeah.
So, and in this, Ken Scott says, I think he said that it was a mishmash of different drum parts. But I think that Paul McCartney played some of that.
Well, they say that they edited together different. It was Paul on drums, because when Ringo walked out, they carried on recording.
Yeah,
they did five takes. So McCartney went onto drums, Harrison was on electric guitar, and Lennon went on the bass. And then Paul McCartney overdubbed it
later on.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because also Paul McCartney was a real perfectionist, and when Jeff Emmerich went back later on to record them. He was saying that, and I didn't know this happened, because I thought they all played together all the time. But in the early days they did, but later on, Paul McCartney would overdub meticulously his bass parts, note by note, and almost drop them in note by note, which I find absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it's accurate, and it's got great feel, and it sounds great. And you know, with the way that we record, which is basically organically and just, you know, on the fly, you know, it doesn't sort of sit well with us, really. But sounds great. Obviously, the Beatles.
It was weird that aircraft sound they found from EMI's library. It's of a Viscount jet taking off. Mm. Now I've got a question: what's going on with their vocals? Back in the US, they've got like a bit of sheepitis going on there. There's a lot of vibrato in places in the vocal line, which is kind of a bit like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Notice that? Because you can hear it much clearer on the cans.
Well, they were very meticulous in terms of the vocals. I mean, and this is where George Martin really shone, because, you know, again, reading the Emmerich book, you find that George Martin really was a facilitatory book session musicians. He did a lot of the arrangements, obviously, the arrangements in terms of orchestras and brass and all those sort of things. But what his key role was, really, was helping to arrange the vocals and the harmonies.
Yeah.
And he used to go down with him and spend hours on the piano actually doing it. Yeah. So they've obviously done this for a reason.
True.
And I actually think it does create a lot of tension in the song. It's good, because it's a bit of a piss take of
well, yeah, they were Chuck saying Berry. It's a parody of Chuck Berry's Back in the USA and the Beach Boys' California Girls, and you can hear that kind of cross-fusion about it. But what I didn't know is that actually when they released it, some group, political groups were kicking off, and the Beatles were officially derided in the USSR as the belch of Western culture. And in the 1980s, Paul McCartney was refused permission to play there.
No.
Oh, yes. There was some. So, I mean, they released a song and it caused a bit of furore, really. So.
Well, with all the stuff that's going on with the USSR at the moment, this former USSR, I should say, although Putin, I'm sure, would like to return it to the USSR, you know, it's probably very appropriate.
Won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You only tell me perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. A million times I ask you, and then I ask you over. You can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. And I don't wanna wind up being parted, broken hearted. So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. don't tell me. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. If you can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. And I don't wanna wind up being parted, broken hearted. So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. And please don't tell me. Perhaps, 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 perhaps.
Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps by Cake.
Very naughty band, aren't they, Cake? They feel naughty, that band.
Well, they are very troublesome. That that album was at a parental...
advisory sticker.
Advisory, that's right, yeah. Because they made naughty words in I Will Survive, which is funny. I can't remember which other
Nugget.
Other track
it was. I think it was Nugget.
Oh, that's, yeah. We played that the other week, actually. Yeah. Really good. With the expletives in it, which was absolutely great. I love this band. I love John McRae. His guitar sound is so horrible. It's beautiful. And it sounds like he's fighting against it all the time. The action, you probably do a limbo dance underneath it. It's probably that far away from the fretboard. It sounds like that. But it's great. And I love the bass. And at the end...
It sounded a bit like accidental flatulence to me.
Accidental.
I was there just going, what is going on?
Oh. But they're very groovy, and that trumpet is such an unusual sound, you know. So, and a lot of it's mariachi sort of trumpet.
Tell me about it. I was listening to it, and then suddenly I just went, oh, no, again. Because I've got this thing about mariachi.
Well, The Distance, which is the most famous track I think they've ever done, was on that album. It's a great song. We haven't played it. We probably will do it at some stage. Yeah. But it's a really, that's a great song. But the whole album is well worth buying. Fashion Nugget. and it really is. It's so alternative, and it makes you smile. You put it on, and it makes you smile all the way through. It's got a humour about it, but there's some seriously good playing on it and seriously good singing, and it is very alternative, and it just puts you into a different mode. When you've been listening to lots of, you know, things like Manassas or Stephen Stills or all that stuff from the 70s, you know, the American stuff, when you put this on, you sort of think, wow, this is really cool, you know. They sound like a cool band. I bet they're great to go to the pub with.
Oh, now that would be something to do, wouldn't it? I'd love that. Now, just before we move on to the next track, what was quite interesting about this song was originally written by a Cuban songwriter called Osvaldo Fales, and it was called Quizás, Quizás, Quizás. Okay. And it was translated by a guy called Joe Davis. It's not an actual translation of the Spanish lyrics. So this guy, Joe Davis, wrote some new lyrics for it. And it was made famous in 1948 by Desi Arnaz. Now, Desi Arnaz, I Love Lucy.
That's right. I was trying to think, I Love Lucy, flipping out.
And I've just realised, actually, that what happened was when he was born in Cuba, he was actually born into some wealth, that boy. Something to do with, like, the Bacardi Empire. His parents owned ranches, and then there was the coup, and they fled. And he basically turned to Hollywood once he went to America.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then he started working. And you know, you say, oh, when you read in Wikipedia about, oh, well, he went on Broadway and he was in this musical, it's just like, oh, yeah, and A follows B, you know, B follows A sort of thing, if you know what I mean. It's not actually that easy to do. It's
absolutely
very quick to read it in one line, but to get there, he must have been really blinking good.
He was. And this track was also covered by Doris Day, wasn't it? Which I think I can remember that, you know.
Really?
Because I kind of remember it from my youth, you know. I think my mum might have had it on
It's
on,
a bit like
Que
Sera, isn't it? Because
yeah.
My mum used to have that Doris Day album as well, that kind of thing.
Great tune. Well performed.
Thank you.
Robert Plant, and a track called Big Log from his second solo studio album, The Principle of Moments, released in 1983.
I love Bob. I think he's a genuinely a great musician. He never ceases to surprise me with what he does. When this came out, I thought, wow, what has happened here? Because it's a drum machine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a drum machine, and it's synth bass.
Yeah.
And the synthesizer's on there. The guitar, Robbie Blunt played guitar on it. Great guitar, but very 80s. It's got that very clean chorus, DI'd strat thing going on. And but you know, it's a fabulous song, and it's a song of its time, but it's got a real beauty about it, and because the lines are gorgeous, the guitar line's gorgeous, isn't it?
Do you know what's really funny about that song? It takes me back in time. I feel like it rocks me. And it's funny you said that, and I don't mean to say this because it was filmed at Rockfield Studios in Monmouth. But what was interesting about that was that my brother-in-law at the time, Nick Stevens, had some friends down at Rockfield, and I met Ray Martinez, and he knew Dave Charles and these guys down there. And Ray's doing backing vocals on that track.
Right.
And his brother Paul Martinez plays bass on that track. The drums, actually, I haven't met Phil Collins, but Phil Collins is playing drums on that. So it's just, for me, it was like this family thing, you know. I think for me, it was the first time I'd met a professional musician. So I was it was quite magical to think that I'd met someone and then they're on this album and that's racing in the background. And I haven't met Paul, but, you know, it was just, it made it a little bit more personal, and that I really loved. And it was at a time I'd been to Jersey, I'd visited my sister there, you know, and I just have just beautiful memories of that time. In fact, I've still got my brother's 7-inch copy of that single.
No.
Yeah, I haven't given it back to him yet. He's not having it now.
You terrible thief.
Exactly. Well, he left it behind. I'm just looking after it. But that was released in 1983. It went to number 11 in the UK charts, number 5 in the Dutch and Belgian charts.
Mm.
But I do really love Robert Plant more and more as I get older and I listen to his music and his. I like hearing him chat as well. I like the fusion of his music and the interviews, because you just get another perspective on the perspective.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Led Zeppelin was, you know, a monster of a band. You know, one of the biggest bands ever, and he was the frontman. So, you know, and he had this enormous amount of success and all that charisma, everything that went with it. Mm. He sadly lost his son, didn't he? And all this was going on, and it. I think it's really tempered him over the years, you know. I think that experience with Led Zeppelin, and what I love about it, he's the one that doesn't want to go back to Led Zeppelin. He's the one that actually tries, well, no, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, he has to be kicked and screamed. I don't think he needs the money.
I don't have to stay out all night. wonderful. She's some kind of wonderful.
Yes, she is.
She's some kind of wonderful.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, is there anybody got a sweet little woman like mine? There got to be somebody got a sweet little woman like mine. Yeah.
Now, can I get a witness?
Yeah.
Can I get a witness? Or can I get a witness?
Yeah.
Can I get a witness? Or can I get a witness?
Yeah.
Can I get a witness?
I'm talking about my baby.
She's some kind of wonderful.
Talking about my baby.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Grand Funk Railroad, Some Kind of Wonderful.
Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah, in the States, they love Grand Funk Railroad.
Do you know what? I was just thinking Railroad is actually, radio. I did a Free Roderick moment then, you know. It's quite difficult to pronounce that.
Oh, no, I just said Railroad. But they were stadium rockers, and you know, I mean, the thing about the Supertone Show is that every week we play stuff that we do listen to at home, and we dug this out the other week. It was an album, and we put it on. We thought, wow, what a fantastic groove, and it really has. When it kicks off at the beginning, though, it's got a real skip. It's got that shuffle thing going on. It's really tight bass, lovely vocal as well, you know. Very American, of course, but it's got a real thing. You
yeah.
Know, I like it.
That's their ninth studio album. Their ninth. And it was called All the Girls in the World Beware. And the cover. I know. Can you imagine now? Think and egg. Right. And the cover featured all the band members' heads superimposed onto the bodies of Arnold Schwarzenegger and a guy called Franco Columbo.
Who's Franco
Columbo? I have no blinking idea.
Not Franco. Columbo.
No. Not unless I got that wrong, I'll have to double check. But I definitely know Arnie Schwarzenegger because there's all these guys like, ripping muscles. And so, all the girls in the world beware. Yeah, right. Kiss my muscles.
Well, David Frick from Rolling Stone said, you can't talk about rock in the 70s without talking about Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah. You said it right then. Yeah. I didn't really know much about them, I've got to be honest. But I do know that they did... They spent quite a lot on their marketing because they were very keen on sort of getting, and they spent like $100,000 on a New York City Times Square billboard to advertise their album Close to Home.
No.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money in those days. Holy
exactly.
Moly.
And they were saying like by 1971, now I didn't know this either, that Grand Funk equaled the Beatles Shea Stadium attendance record, but they sold out the venue in just 72 hours, whereas the Beatles took a few weeks to sell out.
Wow.
So they were huge at one point.
Well, you know, one of the other bands that you often forget about being huge live is ZZ Top. Because I think it was at the second album, so they had a couple of years off, and they came back and did the biggest grossing tour of all time. And I think it's still, you know, Index Links and everything, and up.
Yeah.
It was absolutely massive because ZZ Top, they were, and you talk about the Stones and all these other people, but some of these American bands, and... You know, these country artists, some people, you know, very remiss of us, but we don't even know about, you know. You see them popping up and you think, my goodness
Who's
that? Me.
And they go, oh, yeah, he's the fifth biggest grossing artist
in the
world.
Country.
Yeah, and you go,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and they make vast amounts of money and they do these huge, steady, huge tours. And in the UK and Europe, we don't really understand because that country music, we don't sort of get. I think it is building up in the UK now.
Yeah. I think you know. There's definitely some crossing over, isn't there, really? So we are.
We've got a mate who listens to the show every week, and he's from a band called Steepways. And he came to see us when we were in the Mother's Ruin.
In Bristol.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Lovely bloke, and it's a great band. So I check those out as well. We don't often name check other bands. It's sort of more contemporary bands, but they're definitely worth listening to. They're a great act, you know. And they've got that Americana thing going on. It's quite lovely.
Yeah, they are. Great.
Yeah, lovely bloke. Yeah, so I think we're coming towards the end of the show.
Really? I didn't know you were going to say that, then, by the way.
Well, we are. Yeah, we're coming towards the end of the show. And
big bananas.
Yeah. We've really, you know.
So what are we going to do now? Are we going to talk about the next song? Or are we going to play it and then talk about it after? What do you want to do?
I don't know. I think we should talk about it and then play it.
Really?
That's a great idea, yeah, because it's something quite special this week, isn't it?
Well, I tell you, this band fascinates me because I didn't really know much about it. It's funny, isn't it? Sometimes I do know about these things. But who are the Grateful Dead?
Well, the followers are known as Deadheads, of course. And all the Americans out there going, oh, my God, they're known as the Grateful Dead. But, the Grateful Dead are a monster, another monster live act. And this track that we're going to play is something that I heard on the Isle of Man for the first time. It was a mate of mine, John Barker. He plays in, he's a guitarist, blues guitarist over here. And he always plays this every time I see him. And I said, who is that? And he said, it's the Grateful Dead. And I thought, no, it just doesn't sound like the Grateful Dead. But it's a lot later on in the career. But it's a great song.
Well, what's interesting about when I wikied them as well is the Grateful Dead, it says, right, they're known for their unique and eclectic style. They fuse elements of, listen to this, rock, psychedelia, experimental music, modal jazz, country, folk, bluegrass, blues, gospel, reggae, and space rock.
Awkward, yeah.
And they're live performances of lengthy instrumental jams.
Yeah. Drug-fueled, I'm afraid. But there we are. Well, I'm not afraid at all, but it's that's what they were known as. And sadly, of course, Jerry Garcia is no longer with us. But, you know, he was a great guitar player and very hairy. I like Jerry Garcia. He always looked very hairy.
Yeah, I like the look of him as well, because I've seen him on some documentaries hanging around. He's on that Train documentary, isn't he?
Oh, sure.
And hanging out. Janis Joplin used to hang out with a lot. So this album, it's taken from an album called In the Dark. And do you know why it's called In the Dark?
Why?
Because they recorded in the dark.
Oh, I knew that was coming. Anyway, if you want to contact us, we're on Instagram, Starlight Campbell, Twitter, at Suzy and Simon, that's Suzy and Simon, and Facebook, of course.
And the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and iHeartRadio, so please tell your friends. And we're going to play you out the Supertone Show this week with a track called West LA Fadeaway. Catch you next week.
Looking for a chateau. 21 rooms, but one will do. Looking for a chateau. 21 rooms, but one will do. I don't want to buy it. I just want to rent it for an hour or two. Mistake walking down the street today. I made an old mistake walking down the street today. I didn't want to be mean about it, but I didn't have one good word to say. West LA fade away. Little red light on the highway, big green light on the speedway.
and steady job, hauling items for the mob. You know the pay was pathetic. It's a shame those boys couldn't be more copacetic. I meet a West LA girl, already know what I need to know. I meet a West LA girl, already know what I need to know. Name, address, and phone number, though, just how far to go. Well, West LA fade away. West LA fade away. Little red light on the highway. Big green light on the speedway. Yeah.